Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am back from vacation and happy to be back. In fact, I'm out of my normal routine, so let me start again. Lori Siebert, I'm a CPA to CFP and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. Listen online at wdiy.org. Every week, you can also stream online and you can find podcasts from prior shows under local programs. Look for Your Financial Choices, pick the topic that interests you, and you can listen to the audio of the shows we've done in the past. Today is July 26, 2017. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 21,711, the NASDAQ at 6422, and the S&P at 2477. Our topic tonight is investment terms. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information. We ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at any time on yourfinancialchoices.com. So as I mentioned, I am back from vacation. I have to tell you, I had such a nice vacation. I feel like I've been a wet noodle ever since I got back. I felt like I was gone for a very long time and really relaxed. It was really nice. Sometimes, you know, you go on vacation and you don't relax at all or feel like you're gone or you just start to relax and then you're back to work. But I really tried to pay attention to being in the moment and being present in my enjoyment of Lake Michigan. It was just lovely. So I am back, and I want to thank Jim Ruggiero for being here last week with his guest from iCor. I appreciate Jim guest hosting for me, and I heard he did a great job. So thank you, Jim. Jim's an attorney with Ruggiero Law Offices and has been a frequent guest on the show and, in fact, has talked about estate planning, powers of attorney, special needs trust, and those things. And those shows are also available as podcast on WDIY.org or yourfinancialchoices.com. Thanks again, Jim. So talking about investment terms, anyone can Google investment terms. And in fact, there's a whole website dedicated to investment terms called investopedia.com. And I actually use that as a resource for some of the terms I'm going to talk about tonight. Not that I couldn't maybe answer some of them, but it's always good to get more educational definition if available. So I am referencing some definitions tonight that I got that information off of investopedia.com. What happens though, when you're in a conversation with maybe your investment advisor or you're listening to some information and you hear a term, sometimes the term comes and goes so fast, you might not recall what it was. Or there's one term after another, boom, 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 such that it's just too much information coming at you and that even if you wanted to go Google it, you might have caught one of the words. Or what does it mean when they're all working together? So I thought I would just give you an example of some of this that we might hear in a sentence. So I said, We use the S&P as a benchmark when analyzing your portfolio, where you use passive and active management strategies when buying mutual funds and ETFs, et cetera, et cetera. So we just said a bunch of different things there: benchmark, passive management, active management, mutual funds, ETFs. So I think it's good once in a while to go back, circle back, let's kind of get our bearings and see if we can put a little bit more behind some of these terms. I'm not one to pretend that I know things when I don't, generally, and I tell people that's why I learn so much, because I always think I don't know something. And sometimes when we think we know something, all of a sudden, we might not remember it, or it might have a new twist. Something's changed. The investment world changes all the time. Sometimes some of these terms weren't terms that were used maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago, and they're now new in our vocabulary. Maybe we hadn't used ETFs before, and because we're not familiar with them, we've never considered them again. So I'm going to talk about some of those terms, and I'm going to kind of break it down into some little categories like equities and bonds, and then talk about the different kinds of investments under that, and see if we can kind of just give a big picture. That's investment terms. Next week, I'm actually going to talk about what I call financial terms, more about what is a CFP, a CPA, a CFA, what is a revocable trust, a revocable trust, a living trust, a irrevocable trust, what's a grantor and defective grantor trust. So there's a number of terms, financial terms, that I would like to cover next week. But tonight I thought I'd try to stick to some broad investment terms. So we will often hear people talk about asset allocation and how are you allocated. And someone might say, oh, I'm 60-40, I'm 70-30. Not everyone understands what that means. So generally, let's start with that. When someone talks about asset allocation, it goes beyond just those percentages that we might think of 60-40, 70-30. 60-40, usually what people are referring to is 60% equities in their portfolio or stock and 40% fixed income or bonds. A lot of times people will think, oh, you should do it based on your age. I don't grasp that, and I don't generally like rules of thumbs necessarily, but when people talk about the 60-40, it could indicate how what your risk tolerance is, how risky you want to be. But that's not enough to talk about either, because there is more under that hood. You can all own a car, but we have to talk about the make and model of the car, the year of the car, how has the car been maintained. That's the same thing we have to think about when we look at a portfolio, when we talk about investment terms. How are we allocated is more than just stocks and bonds. It's also about the underlying investments. What kinds of stocks do we have? What kind of bonds do we have? So we're going to talk about, as we go through the show, a little bit about what does it mean to talk about equities? What does it mean to talk about bonds and individual stocks, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, as you heard me mention, ETFs, exchange-traded funds, index funds. What do those all mean, and why is it important for you to understand what they mean when you're talking about investing in your portfolio, whether it's for retirement in a 401k, a 403b, an IRA, a Roth IRA, an individual investment account. It's important to understand some of these terms, and if you do, then you can engage better in conversation with perhaps an advisor, if you're using an advisor, or perhaps with investment consultants, if you have those through work. So we are going to talk about investment terms as we come back from our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about investment terms tonight. And we're going to start with talking about asset allocation. Broadly, what does that mean? And then what makes that up? So asset allocation, as I mentioned, could be a mix of stocks and bonds. We could say equities. We could say fixed income. Those are the general terms we might use. But digging deeper, there's also investments underneath those categories. And we would talk about investing across different asset classes of equities and fixed income. And we talk about investing across broader categories to reduce volatility. There might be investments someone could make in certain stocks that at certain times of the year might perform better, and another time of the year, depending on market cycles or what's happening in the economy, could perform at different times. So we want to broaden our investment decisions based on asset allocation and understanding some of these terms when you're looking at how you should be allocated. So let's talk about equities first. And let me mention the phone number again, 610-758-8810. So generally, when we talk about equity, what does that mean? Equity is usually something we own. So we're generally considering equities as an ownership interest. Sometimes people will talk about what equity do you have in your home, meaning you could buy a $200,000 house with a $150,000 mortgage, and it means you have $50,000 of equity in your home. That's ownership. The same thing can happen when we invest in other kinds of assets. In particular, if we have an interest in business. We might say, hey, we love Coca-Cola, and I would love to own a little bit of Coca-Cola. Well, we can buy stock in the stock market. You can own stock in a company. That's an ownership interest in that company. You are a shareholder. Sometimes people own individual equities or stock in companies. Stock can be held for the potential growth you hope for, or for income in the form of dividends. Dividends being that company is in business, and when they're profitable, they share their profits with their owners or their shareholders. And they share their profits with their owners in the way of dividends. So you can own stock or a share of a company in hopes that the value of that company will grow. If they're doing well in their business, people want more of it, they could have profits. So if people want to buy into a company and they're doing really well, the market will say, hey, that's worth buying, and it drives up the price. So you could get growth earnings from the potential growth of that company, and you could have earnings in the income in the form of dividends. So combined, we call that total return. So the total return is income and growth. Total return. So when you're looking at investments or looking at to buy into something, it's not always just the income you're looking at to see what your potential opportunity might be, but it could also be the growth, because you might be looking for total return. equities, though, then stock can also work the other way. Sometimes the company doesn't do so well. Sometimes the company doesn't have profits and they don't pay dividends. So that might not be an income producing stock for you. They might be a very small company that doesn't have the money to pay out in profits because they're accumulating money for further growth, building, investment in, you know, the inventory or whatever it might be their business is involved with. So a smaller company may not pay dividends, but they may have some potential growth that you would be interested in. So let's talk about what that means. There are value stocks. If you've ever heard someone talk about, oh, that's a value stock. Value stocks are hot now. Well, value stocks, there's also growth stocks. So typically when we think about value, we're talking about stocks that are undervalued. So for some reason, whatever it might be, the market isn't valuing that company at what might be its apparent value. So if something seems to be undervalued for whatever reason, some investors might want to invest in that kind of a company, a value stock, because they're hoping that in fact they will, their market price will eventually get to that true value. So you look to make money in value. Growth means you expect the companies to grow. Small companies may grow faster than larger companies. If someone wants to invest for growth, they would want to understand where the growth opportunities are and how much risk they might want to take. A smaller company might have a little bit more risk than a larger company. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. So growth means you expect the companies to grow. Small companies may grow faster than larger companies. When you hear people talk about what's the market cap, what's the market capitalization, basically what they're talking about is the size of a company. So we have, sometimes they'll say, what kind of stock is this, or what kind of mutual fund, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is a basket of stocks. What kind of company is this? Is it a large cap, mid cap, or small cap? What does it mean? Should we care? It basically tells us the size of a company that we may want to invest in, and the size of that company may impact the risk of making that investment. Let's see if that makes sense for a second. The size of the company may be important in an investment decision because it may impact the risk of making that investment. A larger company might have a great history, a great reputation, proven success, great management, a good board, good business model. They might be paying dividends, might have a great dividend history, meaning maybe they've paid dividends for years and years and years, and just be well established, which might give an investor more confidence than investing in a smaller, newer company that might not have those same characteristics. Depending on the investor and their tolerance for risk, they may want to take the risk with a smaller company. They might want to do that if they have the time and the resources to expend and wait for those potential returns. So when we talk about asset allocation, and we talk about how you might have a 60-40 mix, if you have six, and I'm just making up that percentage, it could be 70-30, 80-20, whatever. In my example, it's not just a matter of, oh, how are you allocated? Oh, I'm allocated 60-40. Lift up the hood, see what is actually making that up. So when we look at the 60% maybe in equities, we might be looking at various investments, but just broadly, I'm talking about certain kinds of companies that would be considered large cap, mid cap, small cap, and there might be a little bit of all of them, depending on someone's risk tolerance. If you don't have a higher level of risk, you might be comfortable with just large cap companies. Those are those big companies that might be proven. Now, sometimes big companies have a change in their business model and they may not have that same projection of growth or history that they've had. So you always have to still be careful and do your research. But you want to understand these various aspects of investments and investment terms so that you can make better decisions in your own asset allocation and investments. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more about equities, and then we're going to move on to bonds. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about investment terms this evening. If you'd like to talk live on air, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air and you have a question, just call in. Lori C's here. She'll write the question down and she will bring it in to me. So we're talking about investment terms tonight. And when we talk about asset allocation, we are talking about using different asset classes of equities and fixed income to reduce volatility rather than putting all your eggs in one basket. If you diversify, it actually has been shown to reduce volatility. And in fact, good asset allocation with the, you know, and diversification, it has been shown to contribute more to performance than stock selection, which some people might still be chasing, you know, particular stocks. It all depends on your risk tolerance and how much you can afford to risk when you're looking at doing investments. But it's really important to understand some of these terms so that you can make informed decisions or have informed conversations with your investment advisor or even your family, your spouse, whoever you're making these decisions with. Real quick, because I want to make sure I get through all these other terms as well. I had mentioned different kinds of equities that you could have, large cap, mid cap, small cap. There's also domestic and foreign, domestic being the United States, foreign being other than the United States. So you could have large cap, mid cap, and small cap, domestic or foreign. There are a lot of different categories of investments, lots of different ways to drill down into either stock selection or mutual funds, again, which are baskets of stocks, that could meet the needs of your asset allocation and risk tolerance. You could have emerging markets, you could have international, you could have large cap, small cap, mid cap, just any, almost any combination in the investment world. So you just want to kind of get your arms around all these different ways to have a good diversified portfolio. That includes bonds. What are bonds? Bonds are debt instruments where an investor loans money to an entity, which that entity could be a corporation, it could be a government entity. Corporate bonds are loans to corporations where they agree to pay you a fixed amount of interest for a period of time. So that fixed amount of interest, it's called the coupon rate. Back in the day when you would have something like a bearer bond, the bond would actually have little stampies on it, little pieces you'd rip off and take to the bank to collect your interest on that bond. It was called a bearer bond, and that was called a coupon, however you say it. So they call that the coupon rate. Interest rate is just as easy to say. So if you have a corporate bond, it's in essence like a loan to the corporation, and they agree to pay you back a fixed amount of interest for a fixed period of time. That fixed period of time, then typically we use the term maturity date. There's usually a maturity on these bonds. Bonds, different than stock, where you're a shareholder and you're an owner, when we have bonds, we're a loaner. We give them a loan and they give us a bond representing that loan, and we then they pay us to, like a bank does when we buy a house or buy a car. We're paying them interest because they've loaned us the money. Well, when you're an investor and you want to make a little money, you might make a loan to a corporation. It's called a corporate bond, and they're going to pay you some interest for a fixed period of time. So what happens with that interest that you're getting is taxed at ordinary income tax rates. And when you sell the bond, you may or may not have a gain or a loss on that bond if it's sold prior to maturity. So if you hold this bond, you hold it to maturity. If it was a $10,000 bond, you're going to get your $10,000. So you made a loan of $10,000, you get your $10,000 back. But what you were getting all along during that loan period was the interest income. Sometimes people want to sell their loans before maturity, and that's where you can have a gain or a loss on a bond. So when interest rates rise, your price of your bond goes down, doesn't look as good, you may not make as much money because someone could go buy a bond making more money somewhere else. So people don't realize they could actually lose a little money or gain a little money on a bond depending on the interest rate and when they're buying or selling those bonds. There was something else I was going to say about corporate bonds, but I can't recall it right now. So let me talk for a second about, certain kinds of corporate bonds. Here we go. Corporate bonds, sometimes there's certain corporations that have better reputations than other corporations, right? So if you're going to make a loan, buy a bond, what is going to happen is the interest rate may be impacted by the company to which you're making this loan. So if it's a really well-known company and it's really safe, well, there's not so much risk in that, and the company might pay you a lower rate of interest. But if it is a risky company and it might not have as good of a reputation, then they might pay you a higher rate of interest because you're taking more risk. And that could be called a high yield bond. So sometimes you'll hear people talk about high yield bonds. Well, generally that means there's a higher risk because the company may not be as financially sound. So not all bond investing is the same either. So you want to be aware of what interest rates, how the bonds are rated, and whether or not it's going to be a good investment for you, or if there's a higher risk of default on those bonds. We also have government bonds, and government bonds, generally people think of them as not being as risky. May or may not be true. It kind of depends on the governmental entity. We have the federal government. We also have, you know, state governments. So we call state government bonds municipal bonds. Federal bonds, those include things like savings bonds, treasury inflation protected bonds, and they're backed by the federal government. So, of course, you know, many, many people feel that is a very safe investment and there's low levels of risk there. So, therefore, those kinds of bonds generally aren't paying as high of interest as you might have with a corporate bond, because with business, you might be taking a little bit more risk than you would with our federal government. Now, remember I told you the corporate bonds are taxed at ordinary income tax rates. That's for federal and state purposes, for states that have income taxes. Federal bonds are taxable at ordinary income rates for federal purposes, but for state purposes, they are not income taxable. So when you're looking at the interest rates that you could get on corporate bonds and or federal bonds, you want to look at the after-tax rate of return and factor that in your decision-making. You want to make sure you understand that. We could take that even a little further when we talk about municipal bonds. Municipal bonds are those that are issued by, you know, states, counties, schools, and supporting local governmental building, infrastructure, investment, etc. Those have even an extra level of tax savings. We'll talk about that when we come back from our next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. The time is now 6:30. Your current temperature is 77. On Thursday, a slight chance of showers with a high near 82. Thursday night, a 70% chance of showers with a low around 68. Friday, heavy rain with a high near 80. Friday night, showers with a low around 63. And Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 79. Stay tuned for more Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert here on WDIY.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. Lori C. is in the studio to answer your call, 610-758-8810. We are talking about investment terms tonight. We've talked broadly about asset allocation and the different types of investments, being equities in, you know, stock, large cap, mid cap, small cap, domestic, foreign. We're talking about bonds. We just talked about corporate bonds, high yield bonds, government bonds, which again are things like savings bonds and treasury bonds, treasury inflation protected bonds. Municipal bonds are loans to local governmental entities, and that could include, as I mentioned before, schools, counties, states. These bonds are tax-free for federal, and they're tax-free at the state level if it's from your state of residency. So for people in Pennsylvania, if you invest in PA municipal bonds, or you will hear people say munis, munis is short for municipals, municipal bonds. If you invest as a resident of Pennsylvania in PA munis, then they are tax-free at the federal level, the state level. And of course, investment income is not taxable for our local earned income tax returns. So you really are saving income taxes across the board on the munis. You have to be aware, of course, any risk that could be involved with any of these kinds of investments we're talking about tonight, whether it's equities or bonds. You need to understand the risk and if that fits with your risk tolerance. Generally, people feel that there may be less risk for the government, the federal types of investments, but there have been municipalities like Harrisburg or Orange County, California over the years, that or Detroit, that have had, you know, a higher risk of default and on their bonds. So you have to factor that in as well. But the tax-favored treatment of munis make them more attractive sometimes for folks. And as I mentioned, you sometimes want to look at and compare the after-tax rate of return on bonds. If you have a corporate bond that pays 4% and you're in a 25% tax bracket, remember I said they're subject to federal tax. They're also subject to local tax. So if you're in a 25% tax bracket, already you knock that down to a 3% rate of return. When you factor in the 3.07% on Pennsylvania, you're looking at a little bit less than the after-tax rate of return of under 3 on a 4% corporate bond. On a municipal bond, first of all, you may not even find 4% now, but for some people with the longer maturities, they might have been holding on to a bond for many, many years. If they had a 4% coupon or interest rate on their municipal bond and they're a Pennsylvania resident and it's a Pennsylvania bond, their after-tax rate of return on that bond is 4%. So you want to make sure that you're understanding when you're comparing the investments that you're making, that you understand the after-tax rate of returns on your investments. The same thing applies when, as I mentioned, we talked about Corporate bonds paying being subject to ordinary income tax, the interest on those. Federal bonds, savings bonds, treasury bonds, treasury bills, having ordinary income on that interest that's being paid. When I was talking about the equities, the stocks, and remember I said they pay dividends. Dividends are the corporation when they're sharing the profits with their shareholders. Dividends typically have tax-favored treatment. And many, many years ago, and I think this was under the Bush administration, prior to this tax reform, dividends were taxed as ordinary income, just like interest. So if I was someone who was in a 25% tax bracket with my wages, let's pretend, and now I added $10,000 of interest income or dividend income back in the day, and I was in a 25% tax bracket, I'd pay $2,500 in tax on my $10,000. Well, during the Bush administration, there was some tax reform because people had complained that corporations pay income tax on their earnings. Then they pass those earnings out to their shareholders, and now the shareholders pay tax on those earnings. They called that double taxation. So there was reform to say, hey, you know what, for those domestic corporations that are paying out dividends, we need to give our shareholders a little break from that double taxation penalty, basically. We're going to lower the tax on those dividends. We're not going to completely make them tax-free. We're still going to make them owe a little bit, but let's make it a little bit more tax-favored. So dividends that qualify for this lower tax treatment are called qualified dividends. They typically apply to most of our, you know, major corporations, domestic corporations here in this country. Back to my example of Coca-Cola. If I get a dividend from Coca-Cola, that is considered a qualified dividend, and it qualifies for a lower tax rate. So when we look at returns on our dividends and we look at after tax rates of return, that might even look better than the after tax rates of returns on, you know, some of the bonds that we were talking about earlier. You want to look at the after tax rate of return on our income that we're getting from our dividends, because it's a pretty good deal. If we are in the 15% or lower tax bracket and we have dividends, we are paying zero tax on those dividends. So for folks who are in lower tax brackets, to the extent you can save some money and do some investments, if you're doing any investments in stocks or mutual funds, which again I'll talk about in a minute, they are a lower tax rate if they're qualified dividends. Zero in the 15% or lower tax bracket. They would be subject to state income tax if your state has an income tax. So that looks and feels pretty good at 0% rate. If you are in a 25% tax bracket or higher, but not the top tax bracket, if you're in the top tax bracket, by the way, is 39.6. So between 25% and 35% tax brackets, then your qualified dividends are going to be taxed at 15%. So it's still a deal. If you're in a 25% to 35% tax bracket, you're still saving quite a bit of money versus income that would be taxed at the ordinary rates. If you're in the 39.6% tax bracket or higher, then your qualified dividends get taxed at 20%. There's also still something called the investment income tax surcharge. Medicare surcharge is what we used to call it. If your income for single people is over $200,000, you have investment income over that amount, you might pay a surcharge on that investment income of 3.8%. So there's thresholds for that. And that is, you know, being talked about eliminating that, but it has not been eliminated yet. So that might apply for people who are single over $200,000 with investment income over those thresholds, or for married couples with investment income over $250,000. All right. But basically, for most of us, we're talking about 0% on qualified dividends or capital gains. By the way, if you sell something that you've held long term over a year, 15% capital gains tax if you're in the 25 to 35% tax bracket, and zero tax if you're in the 15 or lower tax bracket. I want to let me talk about exchange-traded funds and mutual funds for a minute, and then I want to make sure I talk about passive management and active management and benchmark. Those are some other terms I want to make sure I cover. But since we've talked about equities and I talked about stock, I talked about individual stock, maybe you're someone who only has so much money and you don't want to risk putting all your money into one stock. You like Coca-Cola, but you're afraid if you buy Coca-Cola, if something happens to Coca-Cola, poof, you could lose all your money or some of your money or a great amount of your money. So that makes you too crazy and nervous, and you just don't want to put all your eggs in that one basket. Well, there is something called a mutual fund. A mutual fund is a basket of stocks and or bonds, which a money manager has put together based on research that they've done, and they select what's going to go into this particular mutual fund based on an investment objective that they've come up with for that particular fund. They have a prospectus, which is a little booklet that describes the criteria of the investment objective and the cost of this particular mutual fund that they have put together. So the prospectus is basically the criteria, the investment objective, talks about all the underlying costs, expense ratios. Expense ratios are the administrative fees and cost of that fund. What are the costs to have this fund? Because you're paying someone to put this fund together, there's more management in it. They're picking these stocks and or bonds for you. You're not going out and picking Coca-Cola. Some money manager at some fund company has put together a basket of stocks or bonds for you, hopefully to diversify your risk in such a way that you could not do with the amount of money you had all by yourself. Maybe you have $5,000 and that's not really enough to go out and buy, 50 different stocks in a cost-effective way. So companies came up with this idea, mutual funds, basket of stocks and or bonds, and it helps you diversify. You could invest $5,000 and you could get, who knows how many positions. It could be 100. It could be 50. It would all depend on the fund that you've gone into, the mutual fund that you've gone into. So it's a basket of stocks and or bonds that are put together based on some investment objective of the fund. And when we talk about asset allocation and picking different things, you can have mutual funds that will include maybe large cap or include small cap or are domestic or are foreign. So you can even pick a particular mutual fund to fulfill that little piece of your portfolio that you want. All right. Maybe you could just pick one, completely balanced fund, and that might do it for you, but you could pick any number of mutual funds as well to get that asset allocation that you want. Again, because of that additional management, those mutual funds are typically going to have higher fees than you might have in a fund that might be put together that is not kind of by a certain specific investment objective and a money manager is picking and selecting and researching. How could I get access to something that could give me that diversification that might not have as high of cost? Because maybe I don't believe in someone picking and selecting and, buying and selling within that mutual fund. There is something called an exchange traded fund, which I'll go into in just a minute. So the mutual fund is really this basket put together by a money manager. They don't trade during the day. So if you wanted to get out of a mutual fund during the day because you saw the price was dropping, you thought, oh, I'm going to get out, I'm nervous. You can't get out of it during the day. You have to wait till the end of the day when they revalue all of the positions that are in that mutual fund, and you put in your order to sell, and it's going to be executed overnight, but the next day, it's the price at the end of the day, the night before. Some people are too nervous about that and they think, gosh, maybe I want to get out during the day. There are other opportunities with something called an exchange-traded fund, which I'll talk about when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and this is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, you can talk live on air with me or off air. Just give your question to Lori C. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about investment terms. Let's talk about exchange-traded funds for a minute. Exchange-traded funds, a security that tracks a particular index, commodity, bond, or basket of assets like an index fund. They trade like stocks, so you can sell them intraday, unlike the mutual funds that we just talked about. Exchange-traded funds usually have lower fees because there's no active management in them. And they're generally more tax-efficient than mutual funds because exchange-traded funds aren't buying and selling their positions during the day. They're just set up to mimic a particular index. So you might have an exchange-traded fund that's trying to match the S&P. So it's going to maintain those positions. So there's not buying and selling. They're more tax efficient because they're not passing out capital gains. Some people don't like when they get a capital gain at the end of the year and it throws off their tax planning. Sometimes people love it. It all depends. So you have to know what you want for your portfolio and what you're expecting from your portfolio. But generally, exchange traded funds are a little bit more tax efficient and they offer flexibility in that they trade like a stock. So you can buy and sell them during the day. One of the issues you have to watch out for an exchange traded fund is that there may not be as much volume in trading that exchange traded fund. So if you do need to sell your exchange traded fund and there's no buyers out there, you may not get the price for the value of that exchange traded fund. So it's not always as obvious as you think. You actually might not get the full value. So you want to also check the daily trading volume on an exchange traded fund if that's the way you're going. Index funds. Index fund is a passive way to invest as well, and it can come in the form of an ETF or a mutual fund. And again, that is a basket of stocks or bonds that are mimicking a particular index. All right. When we talk about mutual funds, and I said that you can usually have money managers or portfolio managers who are putting this together. They're making decisions. That's active management. You could also have a mutual fund that is mimicking an index, and that is passive management because it's just trying to manage that index. The ETF, as I mentioned, is typically tracking a particular index, and that is passive investing. So let's talk about what passive management is. People aren't trying to time the market. They're just trying to match an index. There's really no decision making other than that initial setting up that particular fund where someone says that this is the index that we're going to try to mimic. So it's considered passive, and generally the fees are lower because you're not paying someone to do that active management. Although there still are some fees for that original bucket that's put together, but it's not paying as many money managers or portfolio managers. When we talk about active management, it's a management style that includes buying and selling strategies that are in an attempt to beat the market. They want to see if their decisions are going to get a better return than you might get in a passive investment. Historically, there is an argument that passive management outperforms active management over long periods of time. Historically, that may or may not be an investor's actual experience. So again, you just have to understand some of these terms to know what's going to fit for you. You try it on, you see what works. Sometimes passive management historically has done better than active management, historically and average, but there are times where active management may outperform passive management. So when you're talking about asset allocation or diversification, that may include not just asset allocation in your investments, but it might also include asset allocation or diversification in your investment management, in your investment styles, in your investment strategies. So keep that in mind as well. But you will definitely have lower costs typically in passive management. Real quick, there are some other terms that also come up, things like REITs and MLPs. REITs are real estate investment trusts. They trade like stocks. And it could be based on a particular kind of real estate that you're interested in investing in. It could be commercial. It could be passive rentals. So that's a real estate exchange investment trust. They do trade like stocks, and that might give someone exposure to real estate that might not otherwise have the funds or wherewithal to invest in their own real estate. People should keep in mind when you're looking at diversifying your portfolio that you, if you are a homeowner, you actually have an investment in real estate. So keep that in mind when you're looking at things. Once in a while, you find someone who you meet that loves real estate, and they have all their money in real estate. Well, that's not necessarily diversified. But then you might have someone who has no real estate, and this would be a way to get some exposure there. MLPs you hear about, limited partnerships, master limited partnerships. Those, a lot of times the master limited partnerships, they can trade like a security as well. There are, for me, they're sometimes a little bit more complicated than people need, because the tax reporting on master limited partnerships or limited partnerships are in the form of a K-1, and people have to wait for those K-1s. There's a lot of information on those K-1s, and sometimes folks don't want such a complicated investment for their tax return, or the complications of reading, you know, the 20 pages that might come with that K-1. With the supplemental information. Sometimes they have some foreign investments and they can get complicated. So you have to understand your own risk tolerance and your tolerance for receiving tax information very late, because sometimes they don't come out till mid-March. So there are any number of investments you can use when you're trying to put together a portfolio. Understanding these terms and asking the right questions, if someone is suggesting or recommending to you certain kinds of investments, if someone says, hey, let's get an MLP, you can say, wait, MLP, what was that? I remember Lori talking about that, master limited partnership. I remember she said that could be complicated. So you have to understand, is it okay for you or is it not okay for you? Understand, ask questions. Let's talk about benchmark for a minute, because a lot of times when people are looking at their performance in their portfolio, they will say, oh, the S&P is up, 20%, and I'm not up that much, and my advisor isn't doing such a great job. Well, the S&P is basically an index. It's a leading indicator of U.S. equities. Let me read this from Investopedia. It's a leading indicator of U.S. equities, and a reflection on the performance of the large cap universe. So remember, we talked about large cap. That's big companies, basically, large companies. And that's what's in the S&P. Remember, when we talk about stocks, we're talking about a little bit more risk versus bonds, which are fixed income. So when you're investing in equities, if you're someone who is risk averse, you might have more bonds. So you might have some bonds in your portfolio. If you talk about, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, an allocation of 60-40, 60% equities, 40% bonds, your portfolio is not going to get the returns of the S&P 500. So should that really be the index that you're using to judge the performance of your portfolio? You have to understand that there are different benchmarks that folks can use. You might use the S&P index as a benchmark for the equity portion of your portfolio, the stock portion of your portfolio, if you're interested in that. But even then, you might not have all large cap. You might have the small cap. So you have to remember, you may not have that same performance. You want to look at a benchmark that fits your risk tolerance, a moderate benchmark. So a benchmark is simply a point of reference that serves as a standard. So again, when you're talking about your investment performance, you want to look at a benchmark that would be consistent with how you invest. The S&P is the one that people talk about more. It used to be, I feel like it used to be more the Dow Jones Industrial Average, but the Dow Jones only has 30 companies in it, whereas the S&P has 500 companies in it. So some people feel like that's more representative. But as I just explained, is it really more representative when you have a more balanced portfolio, if you're talking about comparing it to your entire portfolio? All right. So watch out for that. When I was looking at this and I thought the 30 companies in the Dow Jones, I was curious. I always feel like people are going to ask the question of, you know, what are the 30 companies? And of course, I have no idea off the top of my head. So I quickly looked at the 30 companies in the Dow Jones. And we have 3M, American Express, Apple, Boeing, Caterpillar, Chevron, Cisco, Coca-Cola, Walt Disney, DuPont, Exxon, General Electric, Goldman Sachs, Home Depot, IBM, Intel, Johnson & Johnson, J.P. Morgan, McDonald's, Merck, Microsoft, Nike, Pfizer, Procter & Gamble, Travelers, United Technologies, United Health, Verizon Communications, Visa, and Walmart. So that does sound like a diversified portfolio of stocks, but it's only 30 of them. And they're quite large companies, if you're familiar with all of them. So obviously not, it sounds like a diversified portfolio because you have some, you know, oil companies in there. What else is it? Technology, consumer products, financials, utilities. So there is an array there. But even that, large companies, it may not be as diversified as someone might need if they're looking for diversification. So be careful of the benchmarks you're using when comparing your portfolios, folks. There are lots more terms that investment terms that we have in the investment world. I hope tonight I gave a broad brush kind of big terms that you might hear from time to time, the active management, the passive management, equities, bonds, corporate bonds, government bonds, municipal bonds, high yield bonds, and talking about ETFs, mutual funds, which could be a basket of individual stocks or individual bonds or a mix of stocks and bonds. You could have a mutual fund that has a mix of those. You could have a balanced mutual fund. So I hope that I covered some of that tonight. Hope it helped. And next week, we are going to talk about financial terms, a little bit more about, you know, what is a CFP? What is a CPA, CFA? Some of those terms that you hear. What is a financial advisor? But not just that, what kind of accounts do people have? Might you have a Roth account, an IRA account, a joint account, trust? What kind of trust might someone have? We hear about IDGT, intentionally defective grantor trust, revocable trust, irrevocable trust, testamentary trust, special needs trust, retirement trust. They throw around all these terms in the industry, and I think it's just important that we all understand what they mean so that we can make more informed decisions in the conversations we're having with our advisors and trusted advisors. So hopefully this week and next week, we're going to get a little education. Hope it helps. I want to thank Shondi for being here, Lori for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
Thank you, Lori. I always learn so much from you. This is WDIY. The time is now 7 o'clock. Your current temperature is 77. Here's an update more on your temperature and your weather for the week. Thursday, we have a slight chance of showers with a high near 82. Thursday night, a 70% chance of showers with a low around 68. Friday, heavy rain with a high near 80. Friday night, showers with a low around 63. Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 79. Sunday, we have is sunny with a high near 80. Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 62. Keep it here on WDIY.
Our news in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. The White House says President Trump's decision to ban transgender people from the military was made in consultation with his national security team. But as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, questions remain about how it will be implemented.
Trump's announcement came in the form of three tweets declaring transgender individuals will not be allowed to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. The Pentagon is referring all questions to the White House. And Press Secretary Sarah Sanders couldn't say what the announcement would mean for the estimated 6,000 transgender